When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight, as the Ravens will sweep the series from the Bengals and improve to 7-3.
And that is the way we start the live Friday edition of Sean, RJ, and Bobby here on DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan. Good morning, Metroplex. Sean Sharif back. Thank you guys for holding it down. Mike McCarthy live at 6:30 today. Howard Eskin, the evil Burger King, makes his return to the morning show at 7:20. Eagles sideline reporter will pick the game at 8 o'clock. We got some degenerate gambling action. Nick Eatman, DallasCowboys.com at 9:20. How are things? Everything fine?
Things were okay. We didn't burn it down. We tried. We tried to burn it down, but we did not burn anything down.
We did not. Country didn't burn down while you were gone either. We had an election pass without any insanity totally. So we just all assumed that
he won.
We just assumed you were out.
TikTok,
you know,
was funny.
Boarding up the house or something like that.
Boarding up the house. Yeah. The daughter has just started going to daycare. So I feel like she came home and passed along all that crap. So she's sick. So yesterday, my final day of resting went right down the toilet as I was like, we need to go ahead and keep her home as well.
Are you a nervous parent? Like when baby gets sick, are you just like frantic or are you just annoyed?
No. It's just funny with your wife how you ultimately end up being right about things down the line. She's never going to admit it. But with Oliver, you know, first time sick, oh my gosh, do we need to go to the hospital? Mother-in-law, get the doc, go doc in a box, get the Zoom call ready. And I'm like, it is what it is. They got a 102 temp. It's 11 p.m. We're not doing anything tonight. Just like I told Walchuk. Hey, your wrist is broken. It's fractured. Internal bleeding. It's swollen. You've been drinking a little bit. 11 p.m. You're not doing anything tonight. He ended up going to the doc in the box anyway. So some people freak out. Some people don't. I do not. Look, I do not freak out.
No, yeah, you got to have the Zach Walchuk approach. No freak out. You got to, you know, look, your baby damn near drowns. You just got to be like, it happens. All right. She coughed up the water. She's good.
Eight total touchdown passes between Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. Back and forth. Incredible drama. And we got a Todd Bowles 2.0 situation. Cincinnati said at the very end, we can't stop the Ravens. We can't stop Lamar. They've scored four straight times. We're going for the win. They did not get it. Baltimore improves to 7-3.
They didn't lose the game because of the two-point conversion. They lost it because they gave up the most points in the second half of any game in the NFL this year. You can't give up 28 second-half points and expect to win. You just can't. Both quarterbacks put on a clinic. I don't know. Thank God I'm not facing you this week.
Yeah, it sucks when Joe Burrow and Lamar playing into both of your fantasy matchups. I have Burrow, but I went up against Lamar. Oh. Thank goodness I didn't go up against Chase. And then in my other league, I'm going up against Burrow. So none of that is fun whatsoever.
Right. This was a really, really fun football game. Yes. And there was a ton of intrigue. And
Bengals were up 14.
They're up 14. They blew it. They blew it in the second half. Did the referees miss a rough of the passer or the two-point conversion? Yeah, they did. But, you know, are you going to get that call in that moment? Probably not.
I mean, and maybe a pass interference. That's maybe, what Cincinnati wanted.
That's what they wanted, too. But, you know, you see, I mean, they swipe Burrow right in the face. Burrow's a star, though. Like, it's not like he's not going to get a call. He's a star player.
Yeah, this game reminded me, I was telling Chop when we were walking in, this game reminded me of the Georgia-Alabama game we saw earlier this year, where just in terms of the insane, like, leveling up and, you know, touchdown, and oh, we come right back, and it's a 70-yard touchdown pass, and you've got all this back and forth, and there's all this intrigue, and it's, I mean, Lamar was good last night.
Good. Burrow was great.
Lamar was good passing the ball. He was, that's what I mean. He was great as a player. He was good passing the ball, which is a changeup for him. But I thought the decision to go for the two was interesting. We had this note while you were out, Sean. Last week, the NFL had three road teams kick game-tying extra points in the final minute of regulation instead of going for the two-point conversion, and all three of them lost.
Yeah.
And so Cincinnati tries to adjust, tries to go for it. I think if you're going to do that, try not to run a two-yard route on the goal line so that when you get bumped a little, you're out of the end zone and it's incomplete anyway. I thought the play call was a little bizarre, but man, this was as good as those two quarterbacks were last night. Those were bad secondaries busting a few different times that just, they did not look like they knew how to communicate or tackle or anything else.
Derrick Henry continues to score a touchdown in every single game that they have played this season. Jamar goes 11 for 264. I think it's time to pay. I think it's time to go ahead and pay. And this is the first time that two quarterbacks each had eight or more touchdown passes against each other in head-to-head games in one season. The thriller that they played earlier in the year in Cincinnati that Baltimore barely won. So an awesome, awesome game on Thursday Night Football. Baltimore improves to 7-3. Cincinnati falls to 4-6. We also had action on the ice.
Backdoor feed, shot, score! Sagan somehow found a window. The beat goes on for Tyler Sagan, and Dallas has doubled their lead.
Victory plus with the call as the Stars take care of the Chicago Blackhawks. 3-1 at home. The Stars 8-4 on the season, 6-1 at the AAC.
Yep, this is a great team. We know that. We know they're going to be there at the very end when it comes to the Western Conference Finals, when it comes to maybe the Stanley Cup Final. But this is a team that you've got to beat. You've got to beat Chicago. They're in the middle of what's going to be a really good rebuild. It really is, but, you know, just at this moment, these are the kind of games that you can't afford to lose, and they didn't. They got a good game, good night in net from Otter, and three goals sometimes is enough, sometimes it isn't, but when Otter's going to play like that, you're going to win just about every game.
Go Stars, baby!
And I think the one home loss was technically in Finland, yes, Spittle was pointing out. Stanky leads all rookies in scoring with 12 points. Two goals, 10 assists in 12 games. Jamie Benn was a beast in the faceoff circle, winning 16 of 16. Of course, that equals puck possession. And now you have the huge matchup tomorrow in Winnipeg. The Jets are only the second team in NHL history to win 13 out of their first 14 games. Wow. Spits and Suds podcast is out.
Yeah, that's a uniform game for me. I love the Winnipeg uniforms, the Jet. The military jet right in the middle. I could look at those all day.
Here's the only number you need to know, Sean. 58. It is the NHL season. We haven't broken it out yet. The deserve to win-o-meter on moneypuck.com last night, Sean, had the Stars with a 58% chance to win after all simulations. So clearly they outplayed Chicago.
CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons were limited yesterday in practice, but both are expected to play. Diggs, Guyton, Kendricks, limited. Of course, Dak, Zach, Deron Bland all did not practice. And it sounds like CD is good to go against Filthy on Sunday on this radio station. Quote, my shoulder is much better than it was on Sunday. I feel like I've taken a big step these last 2 to 3 days. I'm good. The injury, more about dealing with pain. Range of motion is all there. No plans, Bobby, of wearing a protective brace on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, he sounds like he's optimistic that he's going to be able to go. If it's a pain management thing and that's all you're worried about, then, all right, you know, they can get him out there and get him prepared. And CD's really tough. Like, CD is one of these guys who he doesn't generally tip how banged up he is or how much pain he's in. So it's not like an obvious situation when he's had those things. So I think he's tough. I think the connection he's got with Cooper Rush is really strong. And so that's going to be massive for him. Because if you didn't have CeeDee Lamb, there's nothing you were going to be able to do offensively.
Chop, the spread for this game is?
I think I saw it late last at 7.5 now.
7.5. Jonathan Mingo, the new wide receiver.
I thought he would have moved the line at least 2.
Spoke with the media saying, I'm glad they took a chance on me so I can show them what I can do. Someone finally believed in me after you were drafted in the second round of the selection process. I'm just happy to be here. Why didn't things work out with you in Carolina? Quote, I don't know. You can talk to them. It ain't up to me. It's between the front office and coaching staff. I know there are some things I could have done better, but I am here now. I will ask Mike McCarthy, how much is he going to play? I'm always intrigued with the brand new player and acquisition. Do they tell you, all right, you're going to run 4 out routes? Do they tell you in the huddle, blue cross, red light, plastic screen, 3-on-2, and then they say to him, slant?
Right.
Because there's no way he probably knows the verbiage. I'm curious to ask Mike McCarthy that at 6:30.
That's what happened with Amari Cooper a couple weeks ago. When he scored his first touchdown, they walked up to the line of scrimmage, and he's literally looking over, and Keon Coleman's telling him basically, like, you're running this.
Yeah.
And then he gets up there, get to the line of scrimmage, runs the route, and scored the touchdown.
Let's go inside the actual film room with Bobby Belt, our Cowboys insider, one half of Love of the Star, to find out what Filthy is all about. Then Mike McCarthy live, the 6 a.m. club, getting your weekend started with Sean and RJ on The Fan.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cowboys Eagles pregame on this radio station at 12:30 Sunday here with Eric Chiafalo and Brian Broaddus. Brad and Babe will have the call, then Walchuk and Broaddus in the postgame. Bobby will be a part of those proceedings as well as the Cowboys and Cooper Rush get set to take on Filthy. Mike McCarthy previews live at 6:30. Bobby previews right now inside the film room.
Yeah, this Eagles offense is starting to click. And they've been good for the last few years. I know there were questions last year about the way in which they were using Jalen Hurts and were they maximizing all of their weapons. But regardless of changeovers that they've made and everything else, they've been good pretty much the last 3 years, 3-4 years. They've been a good offense. The big difference for Philly this year is they're average to a little above average defensively, and they were awful last year. And the big thing there is draft capital that has clicked. So Howie Roseman the last few years has gotten criticism for guys like Jordan Davis not, you know, hitting the way that they expected to, N'Kobe Dean at times not playing the way that they expect. But they've gotten the most out of their guys this year. Their two top draft picks were Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, and both of those guys at corner have been really good for them. DeJean in the nickel has been really fantastic, but Mitchell, competitive, tough, has given them an edge in the secondary and in press because they play a lot of man coverage compared to the rest of the league's rates. But in press, he's been really good, really nice fit for what they like to do defensively there in Philadelphia. So that's a big thing for them, is that they've finally got a secondary that can cover a little bit and can respond. It's not great. There are definitely leaks at times with them, but it's solid. Now, they don't generate a lot of pressure. This is not an Eagles, you know, front seven that's going to have 6-7 sacks in a game or anything like that. This is just about league average across the board type of defense. Play a lot of man match, which is that Fangio scheme of you're playing man coverage until somebody crosses the field and then they switch to zone. And it can be a really complex, difficult scheme for players to pick up on. But they've been able to adjust to it pretty well and seem to have a lot of confidence in it. So defensively, I think that's the biggest thing for them right now, is that they're just...
Is Jalen Carter their best player on defense? Is he wrecking?
I mean, Jalen Carter's really good. The only thing is just DeJean to me has been like out of this world good so far. And he was somebody who A lot of people wondered, is he a little bit of a tweener? Is he corner? Is he safety? Is he a good enough cover guy? Like, there were a lot of questions about Cooper DeJean when he was coming out of Iowa. But he's somebody who has been pretty nails for them when he's played inside in the slot. And so DeJean's been a difference maker. The big thing here for a lot of people, I think, is going to be, are you going to be able to, like, less about the defensive side? I think for a lot of Cowboys fans, they're wondering, like, are you going to be able to slow down Philly enough to where it's even going to matter? So offensively, they've really started to hit their stride in the last few weeks. It looks very similar to a lot of the stuff Kellen has typically done. It's
which is
a lot of deep crossers, swing passes to running backs. I mean, very Air Coryell like in a lot of the stuff that they like to do. Motion. There's motion there. It's not near the top of the league, but Kellen has always tried to push for a lot of motion. He's wanted to be near the top of the league in those rates consistently. He thinks it's a good way to get mismatches. It's probably where he gets the joystick nickname from Michael Lombardi. So when they're about middle of the pack this year in motion, that doesn't sound that insane, but this is a Philly team that has been bottom three for a decade in motion. So they're starting to see Kellen's going to be a big proponent of 11 personnel, which is three receivers, one running back, one tight end. You're starting to see that shift come along a little bit for them where they're running more of that. It felt like the Sirianni influence was still there with some of the two back, two tight end looks that they like to run, but it's starting to go more towards the 11 personnel, and they took big time advantage of it against Jacksonville. They were able to move the ball any which way they wanted. Now, the big thing for Dallas is if they can pressure Hurts, if you can get pressure in his face, he'll make some bad decisions. He'll have some poor throws, but he's gone four straight games without a turnover because it's not consistently happening all the time.
Just like training camp.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Elliott Shore Park's out that crazy run he was on.
200 straight pass attempts or whatever.
So is he progressing as a thrower?
Yes. Yeah, he is. Now, he's still, I think that he's just playing smarter. Like, I've always thought Jalen Hurts can throw the ball well. He just, he makes dumb decisions at times.
Is the improvement over the middle of the field? Is it on the outside downfield, or is it over across
the board? It's decision making. He's essentially the same guy throwing the ball that he's always been. Hurts always gets himself in trouble where I'm going to play a hero and I'm going to extend and I'm going to throw here, and it's like, what were you doing? Just run or throw it out of bounds? What the hell are you doing? Because when he's got time and he can drop back, he's shown he can throw the ball well deep down the sideline. He can hit crossers in the middle of the field. He can hit posts. Like, it's not a problem for him as long as he's got time and he's not frazzled.
Now that he's on the coaching staff, have you noticed Big Dom's impact in their game plan day to day?
Yeah, I mean, Dom is the biggest impact here, I think, for the Eagles this week. No, but you look at this. Barkley is going to be the biggest aspect of this. I don't know how they're going to be able to stop the weapons. So Philadelphia's got A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert. They've got Kenneth Gainwell and Saquon Barkley in the backfield. I just don't know what the way Philly uses Barkley, which is similar to what you see from what Atlanta likes to do, which is run the ball a lot, but also throw some swing passes, do some different things, involve them in the passing game. I don't know if you're going to have the personnel to slow everybody down consistently, but if you can take advantage of the way that Osa's played lately, which has been really good, they're a little vulnerable protecting the quarterback on the interior. Cam Jurgens taken over for Jason Kelce this year. He's been solid, but it's not as good. Mekhi Becton inside at guard, the former Jets tackle. He's a giant. He's like 6'8", 370. He's huge. But he's slow. Like he doesn't have the foot quickness usually. That's why he got moved from tackle inside of guard. He doesn't have that type of foot quickness to be good in pass protection. So they move him inside, hope to squash some of that, but everything also happens faster in there. And Osa is a guy who's quick off the snap and knows how to set up his pass rushes, and that's going to be a problem for them on the interior. So if Osa consistently gets pressure and guys like Kendricks and Overshown, they're doing their job on the second level and kind of containing some of those swing passes and finishing tackles when Barkley and Gainwell get the ball, then you've got a shot in this game. But that's a tall task. You're asking for a lot there.
Dan Orlovsky says that there is a disadvantage for the Philadelphia Eagles, and he makes those stupid faces on the sideline.
I love Philadelphia's team. I don't trust the coach. I think this is the only legit playoff contender where the coach is a question mark. The coach is a question mark. No coach takes more points off the board than Nick Sirianni. It's unacceptable that they continue, and beyond lucky, beyond lucky that Trevor Lawrence throws that interception. Because if Trevor Lawrence leads their team down and they win that football game, I don't think Nick Sirianni's walking in Tuesday morning as the head coach of the football team. That's that bad. The decision-making, the two-point conversions when they're unnecessary, they're constantly going for it on fourth down. It's almost like I'm talking about Jordan Love. There's a difference between being aggressive and being reckless. And right now, the decision-making is reckless because the team is so talented. The offense has become so explosive. But you got to manage these situations better because I don't trust them versus Dan Campbell and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur when it comes to those NFC playoff races.
A lot of questions and heat on Sirianni after Jacksonville kind of worked themselves back into that game. But we all saw how that ended with Trevor Lawrence and the pick. Let's talk about our coach as he joins us live. The head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Mike McCarthy, next on 105.3 The Fan. It is now time for the Mike McCarthy Show, brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. Every Friday at this time with Sean Shreve, RJ Choppy, and our Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. Cowboys Eagles Sunday on this radio station pregame at 12:30. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How was your week?
I was a little bit sick. Choppy was very happy this week, I think, over some different results that came in.
On, right, Tennessee, number 7, baby.
Oh, that's right. I was thinking Tuesday night. Yeah. But
they look great.
Yeah, yeah. Coach, early happy birthday. RJ forgot it last year. We did not want to make the same mistake on Sunday, right. So a happy early birthday.
I would have been fine with some more forgetfulness. That would have been okay by me.
Oh, you didn't want us to acknowledge it? Are you one of those guys? Like, don't get me anything. Don't make it a big deal.
Exactly. No, I mean, I'm 61 years old. I mean, I got, you know, and I think the part of having daughters, you get used to birthday weeks. Sometimes it's a birthday month.
Yes.
So I just try to balance it out at home.
Coach, I've always wondered this with a new player that you acquire, like Jonathan Mingo. How does it work in terms of like playbook versus just plays? Is he going to go into the huddle? You guys have your verbiage and someone tells him you run an out, you run a go, you run a slant. How does that work with a new player?
That's an excellent question because that's really what you have to find a happy medium. These things happen at this point in the season, you hope there is some carryover from language, from past experiences. You know, obviously he's been in a number of different systems the last couple of years, so now he has a new language. So just trying to find a common area of his experience from a language standpoint, the routes. You know, he's definitely has run, you know, most of the routes that we run, but it's just that, you know, it's the details within a route because everybody runs a little differently and, you know, specifically how it fits the quarterback's forward. So you kind of just have to kind of work through that on the side after practice. We've integrated them into practice just to try to get them into the flow of the huddle and give them certain plays. But it's definitely a process, and that's what it is. You got to try to find a package of things that you can put them into to get started, and then obviously there's going to be some communication by his teammates in the huddle.
Coach, outside of quarterback, which probably is the most difficult to acclimate midseason, which positions are the most difficult versus the easiest, and I assume wide receivers more on the difficult spectrum?
No, I think it's obviously it's offensive system specific. You know, there's systems that are built around, you know, I would say the West Coast offense, you know, the building everything around making the quarterback successful. I know the Digit system was a very, very friendly wide receiver system. You know, the origin of it was developed in junior college by Coach Coryell a long time ago. So the ability to have receivers come in, you know, every year, every 2 years, and just learn the number tree, you know. So I think it's, you know, the origin of that is part of it.
Coach, I heard you talking about hanging on to your draft board for situations like this. How long can you hold on to the draft board? Obviously, you want to do homework in Carolina. What went right? What went wrong? How long do you find you can hang on to your evaluation of a player before that doesn't matter anymore if you're thinking about acquiring them?
My goodness, what the hell did you have for breakfast this morning?
Coach, I was out in the past 2 days. It's the medicine. I had 2 days of rest.
Something's different, that's for sure. Another good question.
Thank you.
I think it's clearly, that's a good point. I don't know if I've ever put a timeline on it, but, you know, I think when a player comes available, you obviously go to the tape because the most important is what has he done lately, because, you know, there's obviously potential injuries and things like that that get factored into these decisions too. So, but if you really like somebody in the draft, you should definitely take a deep, deep search into it. I think it's something that, you know, you just can't say, oh, hey, it didn't work out for him over there, and we had a high draft grade that, you know, I'm not going to take a chance on him. So I think it's just a really good procedural process to go through, and I think it works more than it doesn't.
Dallas Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Coach, you're 9-4 in your last 13 games starting a backup quarterback here in Dallas. Why do you think your teams have been so successful in circumstances that most teams find really, really difficult?
I think you just got to give credit to a lot of people, starting with the quarterback. I mean, it's a room that functions together. Hopefully when change happens, you know, it's not felt as dramatically in the huddle, you know, during the most important part, the actual playing of the game. And, you know, and I think Cooper brings that to the table. You know, he steps in there, has that excellent huddle command and those types of things. So the functionality of the offense is still intact. Now, you know, how the defense is going to play him versus how they're going to play Dak, you know, we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, I think that's part of it. And, you know, and I think you just got to be in tune with your team, you know, who you are. And who you are is a lot that has to do with how you're playing currently. So, you know, we're going through a phase right now with some moving parts as far as, you know, positions, guys in and out. So you got to factor that into it. So I just think that's all part of it. And I think to just give a lot of credit to the quarterback room.
Cooper spent 7 seasons here now in Dallas as the backup quarterback, and it seems to be a lot of sincere confidence in him from the players to the coaches and everybody else. What are the traits specific to that role of backing up your starter that you guys have felt Cooper embodies so well?
Well, the biggest thing is his consistency. I mean, he's the same individual every single game, you know, every single day as far as, you know, the workplace, the practice field, and it definitely carries over to his game opportunities, which is reflected in obviously his record. So I think that's important. And, and I just really want to see him play to that, because he doesn't need to go in there. He needs to just be Cooper Rush, and everything's going to work out fine.
Is the game plan, does it have to change that drastically with Coop versus Dak, or a lot of backups versus the starter?
Well, I mean, you don't want to change. That really goes back to the design of the quarterback. So, but it's obviously going to adjust. I mean, you always adjust it. I mean, if you're going to have a system that's built on making the quarterback successful, you're definitely going to adjust it to his play style.
Mike McCarthy here on 105 Through the Fan. Coach, how much serious consideration did y'all give to just throwing Trey Lance out there and trying to get some reps versus playing Rush right now?
Well, I think it's important to play to win the game. So, I mean, everything we do Sunday will be, you know, with that mindset. We have a lot of football left to play. This is a division game. It's our second division game, and it's important for us to be 2-0 when we walk off that field Sunday.
Blink if Trey Lance could play in some type of packages.
Say that again?
I said blink there if Trey Lance could play in any type of packages to take advantage of his athleticism. We'll just wait for you to blink or not.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you. See, now you flipped on the other side of the fence.
I don't think
we're not opposed to ask, you know, scheme questions and playtime questions. And
I just said blink. I left it open-ended with a blink.
You're abusing this friendship. There we go.
Mike McCarthy joining us here at 105 Through the Fan. What is the status of Zeke?
Zeke? No, he's practiced very well. He's part of the plan, so kind of just back to normal.
Coach, the evolution of Jalen Hurts as a thrower. We talk about that with guys like him, with Lamar Jackson. Lamar silenced a lot of those critics. What are you seeing in Hurts, even compared to last year, throwing the football?
Yeah, I think, you know, like any quarterback, you know, a healthy run game helps everybody play better in the pocket, and because you have a better pocket, because of the threat of run always exists. I think, you know, Saquon Barkley, just the way he's playing, and then, you know, in that run blocking unit, what they're doing week in and week out, has definitely has given him, you know, cleaner opportunities. But yeah, I think he's definitely evolving. He's playing at a high level right now. Their offense is efficient. And, I think they're really, you know, in sync here the last, you know, couple of weeks.
Coach, when you study Philly, do the concepts and philosophies on offense look similar to the ones you guys saw Kellen running leading into the Chargers game last year, or even some of the stuff that he was running here with you guys in Dallas?
I'd say it's more towards what they've done there. You know, I think it's, you know, that's a common approach. You have a successful offensive system, but definitely you could see the variations are of what, you know, what Kellen believes in. So that's what I see.
And Coach, you know, in regards to your young offensive linemen, Tyler Guyton, Cooper Beebe, you've talked before about peaks and valleys and how it's important to learn from the valleys but not dwell on them. How do you approach making sure guys like Guyton and Beebe, they receive the correction, the coaching points that you're trying to give them without having them beat themselves up over those negative aspects?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, that's the synergy that you have between players and coaches, whether it's the position, the, you know, in the group, in the units, and also in the team. So, yeah, that's I would say we have a very positive culture that promotes growth all the time. But, it, you know, the demand of the coaching staff is something that, you know, that I'm always in tune with. I don't think you can ever, you know, today have your demand high enough. I mean, generationally, when you look at the players over time, you know, the way you communicate today is definitely different than you did 10, 15, 20 years ago. So, but yeah, I think our guys do a really good job of that.
Coach, how much of it for CD this week is going to be pain management versus, you know, like just range of motion and ability to play at a normal level with the shoulder?
I would say it's, I'd put it in the category of pain management. Just the way he practiced yesterday, he had a heck of a day yesterday, so he looks good. But it's definitely something he's gonna have to deal with.
Coach, you know, you've been around a number of different teams during your coaching career. Is there a specific season or team that you worked with that you think back on and say, I remember we were in a similar spot, we managed to right the ship, and I can draw on these experiences here to know, all right, this is how we get things going in the right direction?
Definitely. I mean, I've had a number of injury-filled seasons in Green Bay. You know, just going back through the timeline. 2010 was the first big injury season that we had up there, and it probably was the most prominent. And that turned out great. 16 was another one. We were same way, decimated behind the eight ball. You know, at the middle of the season and righted the ship and lost the NFC Championship game. So I've been through it, and then I've had games, you know, 13 and 17 where you lose your starting quarterback for almost 10 games too. So, and those are, you know, tough years. So I've been through it a number of times.
Coach, have you found over your years that when you do lose the quarterback or you're in a losing streak, even more so than a losing streak, that is the time that players can lose focus the most when that quarterback goes down?
I think what I've experienced, and it's very evident this week, the focus gets tighter. I think on offense, what I've seen on offense is just the guys rallying around Cooper because they know he's going to bring it. You know, he's always super prepared. I mean, if you're a young player and you've figured out how things work on offense, if you have a question, you know, Cooper Rush is one of the first guys you're going to go ask. So, I see the focus this week as far as, you know, the details of how we want to play and the demand of getting things done. It's definitely been there in the preparation.
Is it crazy to think that there's just like a feeling of pressure off? Like, we're under 500 right now. The noise has been so loud. We lost Dak. Just go out and play free. There's nothing to lose. Is it crazy to think that these guys could play freer and looser?
Well, that was the message last week, just to make sure that they were free and open. And I thought we went into the game. We were definitely prepared and started that way. We just, you know, you got to sustain that. So I think those approaches, you know, as far as how you message and what you want out of the team are accurate, and you have to acknowledge it. But I can only go by what I see and feel in the interactions with our players every day. And I mean, we had a hell of a practice yesterday. It was probably, I mean, it was a little choppy in the beginning, but the physicality and the energy and the juice was exactly what I was looking for.
Coach, fantastic yet again. Thank you so much. And here's to a happy birthday on Sunday. Go get them. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Back at you. The head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Mike McCarthy, brought to you by the Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. A couple of times he pointed to yesterday's practice, getting a little bit chippy. There has to be a pressure off feeling, I would think. Everyone thinks you've been eliminated, basically. People are making fun of you as a laughingstock in the league, on the field. Your trade acquisition, you lost your quarterback. Y'all, who gives a flying F? Just go out there. And you have absolutely nothing to lose. And you got a backup quarterback. I would think that could help them.
I would think so, too. Now, you know, have they lost these games because the pressure's been on? I mean, probably not, especially defensively. But I do think when you play looser, you play better anyway, regardless of whether or not you've played poorly in the past. I generally agree with what you're saying.
I would think there'd be a pressing. There's no way to measure this, right? You'd have to ask the guys, too. I would think that there'd be a pressing, especially offensively. Mm-hmm. We got to match the other team because our defense stinks. And your defense is getting absolutely destroyed and sideline bickering. And expectations, have to be there for them within the lines during the four quarters. Maybe that goes all out the window when kickoff takes place, but that's my guess.
Yeah, look, and I think there's, and you heard Mike reference it there a little bit, where he says, you know, it's only our second division game. That's something that they're all, I think, in that locker room rallying around right now is, we've won our only division game so far, and we have five more. So, like, yeah, the margins don't look great right now, but if there's any gap you'd want in the second half, it'd be all these division games we have left. That's going to be our best chance to close this, is two against Philly, two against Washington, and then another against the Giants. And so, yeah, I mean, I think they're optimistic genuinely in there right now because of that thought of just, we still can control things a little bit with these division games.
They have put themselves, like, there's no doubt, in a hole that they have to go 5-1 in the division. Right, they really do. Like, because that just gets you to seven victories, right? And and you're going to have to split the rest of your games.
Yeah, it would get you to seven victories, and then the rest of your games you have Houston, Cincinnati, Carolina, Tampa.
Did Eric Kendricks reject the help from Brian Broaddus yesterday on the G-Bag Nation? Bobby, you heard this. You got the audio. Set it up.
I did. And this is something that Zach Wolchuk told me about. He's like, this is a little weird with Kendricks there at the back end. But I guess Brian last week had, during their Eric Kendricks interview that they have every week, had given him his tip of the game, or I got your tip here. And it seems like Eric Kendricks thought it might have tipped off a little too much, that you saw too much of a vulnerability, maybe tipped it a little bit. So yesterday when Brian got into his tip, Eric Kendricks wasn't having it.
Hey, Eric, okay, you said you're watching Cam Jurgens' center. Okay, here's my tip of the week, watching him play.
Okay, wait. I remember there was a tip last time.
It was special teams. It was a special teams tip.
All right, well,
you were on special teams. But this is a tip about Jurgens.
Do we not want this? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, really? I'm just saying, like, chances are, if you know a tip, I know a tip. So
I'm confirming.
Let's go tip for tip now.
I'm confirming. I'm just
no, you don't need to confirm. I do my homework.
Okay, I'm just...
So he knows this. Basically, I'm just asking
this. Okay.
Oh, man.
Which I cut it there, but Brian did go on for the next 90 seconds with his tip for the game.
He did?
Oh, my God.
It was just a 90-second explanation, so it didn't, like...
What was it?
That when Cam Jurgens... when the guards will look back for silent count, and then they'll tap the center for the silent count, he said that, I've noticed that when they tap Jurgens, he immediately snaps. There's no head bob or anything else, and yada, yada, yada. And so
was Kendricks trying to say, don't say it out loud... Yeah. To mess up the advantage we could have?
There's, look, I mean, I have no idea if other teams monitor player interviews or radio stations.
Fans think they do.
You think the Dallas Cowboys listen to Philadelphia Sports Talk Radio? There's somebody with the Cowboys this week listening to Philly Sports Radio.
That player scheduled interviews and locker room availability, somebody monitors all that.
Teams listen to the other radio station, or they go to like the website?
Like if they know like a player's got, like for instance, Dallas Cowboys will post the Eric Kendricks interview every week. And so if they know a player's got an interview or they know coach has gotten it, like I'm sure like Philly is going to listen to what McCarthy just said.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. I mean, listen, that's because it's the same thing. Just look at baseball. You don't ever tell that a pitcher's got a tip.
So part of the media policy changed when it became a little more stringent with social media and reporting what you see at practice stuff changed in 2015, where there was a fake punt that they were practicing here in Dallas. And I don't know who, I don't remember. Some reporter had said, oh yeah, they were practicing a fake punt this week. And I guess Green Bay heard about that report and they were totally ready when they went for the fake punt and snuffed it out completely. And I was like, all right, we're changing the way you guys talk about what you saw out here. And that's why I think Mike was saying, oh, scheme, lineup, scheme. Because he said the same thing yesterday to Ed Werder when Ed started asking. He said, well, scheme and lineup, we're not supposed to get into that.
That had, I can't believe brought us powered through with the same, with the point. Kendricks is saying, don't say it. And Broadus is like, no, I have to show off my big football brain here. And I have to, but that had to hurt his feelings a little bit that Kendricks is rejecting his help. He's like, no, I don't care about the former scout information.
What are the chances that the players, that the players don't know? Like, you know, what would have been the chances that Broadus was actually saying something that the players didn't know?
I mean, sure, I guess it's possible depending on how good a study somebody is. But I think that's what Kendricks was kind of saying, was like, let's just assume I know, and we can move forward with that, because I don't want us to tip anything. Because, yeah, you look for little, like, you know, advantages or, you know, tells that you can get. And I don't think Brian was being malicious by any means or anything like that.
877-881-1053. In order to hit us up on the Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line, as we have a little bit of a rainy Friday morning to start off your weekend. And how many people have off on Monday, which we just found out about yesterday?
Veterans Day, right? Is that what it is? Veterans Day?
Mm-hmm. I don't have it off. I'm going to be right here.
Well, none of us have it off, but I mean, the Tolos, listen. You?
No, I don't. I was saying, oh, we don't have it all.
Yeah, it's not a noon game, so Peyton probably takes it off.
By the way, before we even got our cut sheets in here yesterday, the first sheet that was printed off and walked down the office was Peyton taking advantage of the comp day he was emailed about.
Oh, he already picked out his comp day?
He went and dropped that sheet in at, like, before he came in here and brought us the cut sheet. I was like, well, this is the priority. I got to fill up my comp day that I want.
All right, we're going to have the Burger King Howard Eskin off the Philly sidelines next to Big Dom. Join us at 7:20 this morning. We'll have the junk drawer at 7:40. We'll pick the game at 8. And RJ Choppy with your college football selections and degenerate picks in the 9 o'clock hour on DFW Sports Station. What about the rest of the NFL after an awesome Thursday night football game? Jared Goff will win the MVP. Washington will have the Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, and what's EOY?
Executive
of the Year as well. RJ Choppy around the rest of the NFL with Fact or Fiction next.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.